You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 138. This episode, An Evening with Tim Seeley. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/lanterns. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
I'm your host, Frankie Mateo, and we are bringing you such a special episode today. We have current writer of Nightwing and soon-to-be current writer on Green Lanterns, Mr. Tim Seeley.
Thank you for having me, sir.
It's a pleasure to have you on. My other hosts are Brandon West.
Hello, hello.
And Colton
Clayton. Good to talk to you guys.
Good to see it.
All right, so Tim, to pretty much like start everything off, you're already coming from an iconic franchise. You're writing the Nightwing title. Before that, you wrote Grayson, arguably one of the best superheroes out there with the best butt, apparently.
That's what they tell me.
How does it feel to come onto to Green Lanterns? Like, did you seek out the current writing position, or were you approached for it?
I was approached for it. It was kind of a midline sort of refresh. Kind of want to switch things up. So they asked me about doing Green Lanterns, and I had to think about it for a few days because I don't come from a ton of familiarity with Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. I was never like a super huge fan or anything. So I thought about it for a weekend, and I went back and read all the Lantern stuff I had and picked up some new stuff. And I kind of thought it was something I could come at with a fresh perspective. And after having spent the last, 4 years in Gotham, pretty much, there was an appeal to getting to do something outside, a city, urban-type environment. And especially getting to do, I've wanted to do a cosmic thing for a really long time. And the only time I ever really got to do it is I did Deadpool versus Thanos at Marvel once. And, getting to go back and do something, and I did some Guardians of the Galaxy, too, but getting to do, a space science fiction story is really freeing and open after doing so much Gotham stuff. So I jumped at the chance. I came back and said, yep, all right, I'll do it.
I did read that run you did on the Deadpool versus Thanos book. It was really, I actually loved that book. It was funny. I'm guessing spending so much time in Bloodhaven, Gotham, all the dark, gritty tones of this weird urban environment, I guess the outer space angle can be a lot more freeing, a little bit more jovial, I guess. It's a lot more fun.
Yeah,
go for it.
I always approach, I try to approach Nightwing as he's a pretty, lighthearted guy, but in those kind of stories, you're limited by, the realities of, to some degree, it's still a superhero comic set in a fictional version of our world, but, you're limited to some degree by the reality of, what law enforcement is like and what these places have to deal with. And there's a suspension of disbelief that's hard to do sometimes. But, the cosmic cop thing, you get to really kind of open up the rule book and throw a bunch of it out,
Right. Now, when you were approached with Green Lantern, you said you didn't have that much experience for it. Like, what, before reading anything, what was your main, what was the one thing that always stuck in your mind of the Green Lantern character? What did you think about Green Lantern when you first thought about it?
So when I was a kid, the Green Lantern stuff I had was the Denny O'Neil Green Arrow Green Lantern crossover book. I had that when I was a kid. And my brother was reading it when Ron Mars was reading it, and Kyle took over, Hal went crazy and did that stuff. So that was sort of my childhood experience with it. I wasn't like, you know, as a kid, I religiously read Spider-Man, or I religiously read Batman. And I wasn't that kid with Green Lantern. But, you know, I also, I think to me, the one that stands out and sort of informs my thinking about the character is that I was a huge fan of Grant Morrison's JLA run from sort of late 90s era. So that was kind of my thought on it. Like, Kyle Rayner is my Green Lantern that I grew up on, really, that I have the most experience with. And just the way that Grant did this, really, like, Kyle was this young guy, and he was excited to be a superhero, but he really probably had the most powerful weapon of all of them. And, you know, the kind of relationship he had with Wally, like, all that stuff, I think, is what informed what I would want to do with it, which is, you know, these are people chosen to take on a job, and they aren't necessarily, in their real lives, you know, they're not the people that are successful in their regular lives. They don't have the best jobs. They don't have, you know, but they get chosen for this job that when they go off planet, they're like, they're a space god, right? So that was kind of my, I think, what informed my take on the character.
Nice. Like, to be completely honest, that was pretty much my first experience of Green Lantern too. Kyle Rayner, the JLA run with Grant Morrison. Still love that series to this day. You talked about how Kyle and Wally were like, you know, like a good pair. Are you going to take any of that sort of characterization for Jessica and Simon during your run?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think, you know, what Sam was doing and what Jeff had kind of, I think, it wanted that book to be was, it's sort of Green Lantern. It's Lethal Weapon in space, right? It's two people stuck together, they're partners, and they don't necessarily like each other, but they come to have an important relationship, and they become important in each other's lives. And, you know, I think that's what Sam did with it. And at the end of his run, I think Jess and Simon are really good friends. And I think whatever the intent originally was, to maybe have them be bickering or they don't like each other, the characters kind of chose to have this kind of close relationship. They're you know, I think it was inevitable the way Sam wrote them that he had to go in that direction. So I'm coming into it with that as my basis. But I'm also, I want to push the, you know, this angle that they have different approaches to what this is. And I think for, you know, they should be friends, they should bicker, they should be really close when they need to be, but I think it has to be about their different kinds of Green Lanterns.
That's good. Brandon, you have some questions for Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining us again. Let's talk about some art. Carlo Barberi and Ronan Cliquet are two of the artists attached to the series, at least for the moment. How challenging has it been to write for two different artists like that?
It's actually three, because the other one is I can't think of his name. It's three guys, and they're rotating between issues. And they're guys that were working on it with Sam before this. So they're just kind of coming in. I'm coming into it as the newbie, and they're veterans. But yeah, it's weird for me, to start with three new artists, but I'm also sort of used to it, because on Green Lantern, I mean, on Nightwing, we had the same thing, you know, to make these books bimonthly, you sort of have to have two people and a person who comes in to save the other two when the deadline gets so crazy. But these three have really different styles. Dudu is like super realistic and like almost photographic and really dynamic. And Carlo is really cartoony and kind of, you know, almost like manga influenced. And Ronan is this like classically trained, really realistic, heavy inks kind of comic book art. So I try to write when I know who's going to be drawing it, which I have a schedule that says, you know, who's on what issue. I try to aim towards their style a little bit, but again, you know, on the other hand, I also sort of need to have a consistent story. So it's been interesting. I mean, the cool thing is I get pages in almost every day, because I've got three people working at the same time. So it's kind of a bounty of riches that way. And then, you know, these guys are, you know, the second arc with Balfunga, I've got two guys working on the story at the same time. You know, it's a two-part story, and I'm seeing pages from the second half at the same time as the first half, and they're making it work. You know, everybody's kind of in communication and seeing the other person's designs and stuff. So it's working out good. I think the readers will be happy.
Good, good. Do you know if that's the plan for it to keep going with the three-man deal?
I think so. I mean, these guys were sort of chosen to be the holdovers from Sam's run. So, you know, I think they have a really good relationship with the character and with the editors, and you know, they all know each other, so they can trade pages and stuff. So, yeah, I think that's the plan going forward.
Okay. We talked a little bit about Simon and Jessica's relationship. What about the supporting cast? Do you plan on expanding that or keeping it close-knit? And let's talk love. Any love interests for these characters coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to use the family characters that Sam had set up. You know, I don't deal with them a lot in my first arc, but at least, you know, there's definitely that's there. But kind of what I wanted to do was to add to their space supporting cast and go outside the Lantern Corps. I think there's been a tendency for the past few years for, you know, and I think it's because the fans love it so much, but, you know, there's this tendency to be like, their bad guy this month is the Red Lantern Corps, and the bad guy is the orange or the yellow, and I just wanted to move away from that stuff and open up space a little bit and have them encounter some villains and some supporting cast that are not related to the, you know, the Rainbow Corps characters. So, so there'd be a lot of that, and we'll definitely, you know, one thing I wanted to play with was, and it's something I kind of did in Nightwing, was just, you know, Simon's a pretty young guy. I was a young guy once, and I remember dating around and having successes and failures, and then we're going to sort of do that right away. I mean, he's trying to find love. He sort of has an expectation from his family about what he's supposed to date, and there, you know, it's different viewpoints of what he should have. And then for Jess, I think we're really going to sort of work on, she's working on herself, and she's actually really kind of comfortable with herself right now. So that'll be a, you know, a story thread that we'll pick up as we go along.
That's really interesting. I'm trying to hold back my smile because, you know, I love everything you just said. yeah, I love love. Question about...
Can I say right now, he very much loves love. I mean, so much Carol Ferris in this guy's heart.
Yeah, Carol's my heart. So if she shows up, then you'll have a number one fan.
Well, it's weird because, I mean, so far Green Lantern fans are much different than Nightwing fans, because Nightwing fans is just like, you know, it's the constant drumbeat of they want him with one of his ex-girlfriends. Like, put him with Starfire, put him with Batgirl. Like, oh, I
was
going to
say, it's either between either Barbara Gordon or Starfire.
Yeah, I don't want to do either of those things, and I was just always sort of stuck arguing with, I don't, that's not a way forward. It's not, you know, so I'm just, so this way, I like Green Lantern fans just, you know, sort of more, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you feel like making Simon a whore, go ahead. No one will.
Well, he can't, yeah, I mean, he can't be, right? I mean, by sort of his family and his faith.
True.
Like, he can date around, but he can't, you know, he can't be... Can't be Dick Grayson for sure. So he has to.
He has to balance, at least he can't tell his family, anyways.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's. And then, you know, that part has been, I think, a lot of fun. We'll get some good mileage out of that too.
Now, you mentioned expanding the villains past the Rainbow Corps of elements. Are these going to be new creations? I know you're tackling Balfunga first, but do you plan on creating a lot of new characters in your run?
Yeah, I mean, Balfunga's second. The first arc is all new stuff. Second arc is Balfunga, but Balfunga is kind of a victim in this one, so he's going against other bad guys. So there is a whole bunch of new bad guys in the first arc, second arc, and third arc. So I made sure to – that's kind of – I mean, I guess that's my shtick, is when I come on to this stuff, I just try to make up some new bad guys. I think, you know, Simon and Jessica specifically don't have their own bad guys. They have Green Lantern bad guys. So I wanted to give them villains that were their own, that reflected aspects of themselves and their relationship, and that was a big motivation So, I mean, in the first arc, you get like four new characters that I'm going to use. In the third arc, and the second arc, you get a big new villain that I add to, you know, the mythology that's completely unrelated to the emotional spectrum characters.
Oh, that's I cannot just say that's so refreshing here. I was going to say, as long as they don't have a ring in some form or another, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the thing is, Jeff made up these really cool characters with those, you know, like Atrocitus is awesome and Bleed is awesome, and mm-hmm. and all those characters are really cool, and it's so hard not to want to play with those toys. I mean, literally in some cases, because they're cool action figures even. But on the other hand, like, I think there's a tendency to, if the Lanterns focus only on that, then I think we forget the idea that they're cops, right? They're cops tasked with crimes in their sector. So if we focus on that, we can do crime, you know, stories.
You mentioned once before that your run on Nightwing was going to be a superhero story first and espionage second. What would the second genre of Green Lanterns be?
I mean, to me, it's a cop story first and slice of life story second. You know, and then obviously those elements are sort of stuck together with a sci-fi, you know, element. But yeah, I think what Sam figured out with it is that it's really a very human story. Like, he did an issue where, you know, Simon had to cook cookies for his mom. And you know, I think that resonates because they have these human lives that are sort of a drag, but they have to live them because they can't just fly out to space all the time and be heroes. So, you know, that's going to be a big part of ours. Is the first arc is about them trying to get jobs on Earth. You know, they have arguably the greatest job in the universe. They're given this amazing weapon and they're trusted to do this job. But at home, you know, Jessica's resume includes 4 years where she was trapped in her house hunting for squirrels and peeing in human litter. And Simon has this record, which if you look up his name on the internet, you're going to find the word terrorist. So these are two people who, you know, are legends when they leave the planet. But here, they have to deal with these sort of bad resumes. And that's kind of the focus of our first arc.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with some rapid fire. And this is mostly about you more so than it is about Green Lanterns. So I am judging you.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm used to it.
Yeah. Vodka or coffee?
What's vodka?
What's vodka?
Oh, vodka. Oh, yeah. No, vodka. Yeah, vodka. I just had vodka. Yeah. And I don't drink coffee. I drink alcohol, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff. Music when you're writing or silence?
Music without lyrics. Mm. If I hear lyrics, I start typing them out. So I listen to a lot of electronic and synthwave and that kind of stuff.
TV or movies?
Oh, man. I used to be easily able to see movies, but TV's kind of gotten pretty good. Movies still. I'm still a movie guy.
Okay. Hal or Kyle?
That's tough. I mean, as I go back and read Hal, I kind of like him even more. You know what, Kyle? Let's go Kyle.
There you go.
It's a tough call for me, but yeah. No, I like Hal too. I like him a lot. But yeah, I think Kyle, he's more my speed. He's an artist, right? So I get it.
There you go. All right. Last question from me. What do we have to do to convince you to draw an arc of Green Lanterns?
Oh, man. I would definitely do a cover or two if it comes up. But yeah, maybe someday. I mean, maybe I can do, I don't know about an arc, but maybe I can do a fill-in issue or something. I wouldn't want to, you know, stomp on my guys that are doing the job. But yeah, it'd be cool to do this. I would like to sometime at DC write and draw the same issue. I haven't, the closest I've come is I drew a couple of pages of Batman Eternal that I wrote. But yeah, someday. Someday I will do this. I don't know how, but I will figure out a way to do it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brandon. Colton, you had some questions for Tim.
Yes, I did. You talked briefly about your history with Green Lantern as a reader, but I was wondering, did you have to do any research for the book, like for the more modern stuff? And if so, is there any particular creator or story arc that most influences your work on this title and where you want to take it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I first started, I read everything that exists for Jess and Simon. And then I went back and bought a bunch of the old stuff, going back to like the Marv Wolfman run and the Len Wein stuff, and you know, that era of the Hal Jordan stuff. And then I read all of Geoff Johns' stuff, which, I mean, it's impossible to work on Green Lantern and not have Jeff in your mind, I think, because he's such a, you know, legendary take on the character. And I think he kind of brought the franchise, you know, back to prominence and kind of made it what it is today.
True. He's also the boss.
Yeah, he's the boss too. I think just like, as far as now that I'm working on really kind of getting into it, and the stuff I think I'm pulling from most as far as influence is actually probably the like Len Wein stuff, era of like Tales of the Green Lantern Corps and that sort of era, like the early 1980s stuff, just because it kind of went back and forth in that space opera type thing and the cop stories. So I think that's kind of what I want to do. I want to be able to do, you know, these investigative stories. They're detectives in some way. They're cops. But they're also doing this science fiction thing. And I think that era around there did that. I mean, I think the later stuff, you know, Ron Mars's run is really superhero stuff. It's really cool, but it's really superhero. And I didn't want to do just superhero. I wanted to, I wanted to kind of do cop stuff. I wanted to do crime stuff, but like crime stuff with aliens, you know, and play around with that kind of aspect. I think that was sort of there in those early 80s stuff.
I think that'll bring a lot of fresh air to the recent runs of books, because it's like it really stands out from what we've heard of like a lot of the other books we've read.
Yeah, I mean, there is a tendency. I think, you know, Green Lantern looks so superhero-y. It's such an iconically superhero look that I think the original concept that they're really, you know, they work at the precinct. And, you know, like, one of the things I kind of want to bring into it is if you're a cop on Earth, you deal with so much, you know, paperwork and bullshit and bureaucracy. And I kind of want to bring some of that in there. Like, you know, cops have to deal with shit like, oh, whose jurisdiction is this? I don't know. Is it yours or mine? I don't know. I don't want to, you know, and like just that kind of stuff, to bring a little bit of that into it to make it feel a little more real, you know, a little more human, I guess.
Yeah, I just love the mental image of Greenland to sit down at a desk to just start filling out paperwork. It's like, I fired my ring this three times. I killed someone here. This is why.
Yeah, I mean, and they, you know, they, I mean, I definitely don't want to get too realistic where I deal with like police overreach and that kind of thing. But I think, yeah, you're exactly right. Like they are given this weapon and entrusted with it, and there's got to be some kind of oversight, and there's got to be, you know, I mean, you see that sometimes with the honor guard and that kind of thing in the old stories, you know, like who's in charge of this stuff and who enforces the rules and who gives them the information? Like, is there, you know, does there sense, like who controls the knowledge about what's on what planet? And, you know, like, I just thought all that kind of stuff would be really interesting and, you know, not go into the boring side, but just add layers of detail.
I mean, there's got to be responsibilities. There's got to be, you know, accountability, because you can't just, you know, like go like blow up a planet and just be like, oh, everything's fine, everything's good here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and they have really hard jobs too. And part of it has to be they fail sometimes, and they, you know, they don't always get along with the people they work with. I mean, yeah, plenty of stuff to reach into, I think, with that kind of story.
All right. With the tone of the book, how much of the book is like trying to be just small character and single interactions, and how much of it is trying to be more grand and operatic with big consequences and big effects?
I mean, I think that's what makes it a Green Lantern book, is it has to be both those things. You know, in the first two issues, this story about them getting jobs. It goes back and forth between them trying to hold a planet together that's being, you know, tidally crushed by gravitational pull from a supernova, and then applying at shitty jobs. Like, Jess is trying to get a job at a vegan restaurant in Portland, and Simon is trying to get a job at a racetrack as a pit crew. And they're, you know, they do these amazing things and, like, you know, push the planet out of the orbit of, you know, of this supernova, and they evacuate an entire race of humanoid creatures. And then they have to explain their resumes to, you know, a middle manager at a vegan restaurant, you know, in Portland. So
I'm just imagining someone having to call the Green Lanterns. Like, it's like to get a call to the Guardians of the Universe. It's like, can you give me a recommendation for my new job?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we're going to play around with that. I mean, you know, Jessica has this really twisted story, and like, how does she get someone to hire her to do something with responsibility when, you know, once she ran into the woods and didn't talk to anybody for 4 years? Like, how does she explain to someone that she's ready to serve food to the public? You know, I mean, that's a big story to me.
You know, I wasn't actually thinking about asking this, but your mention of like them having to get jobs, like, how does Green Lantern pay work for your setup? Do they not get any compensation?
No, I mean, they can't be paid. It's actually a set, like, it's kind of explained in one of, I don't remember which rule book it is, that Green Lanterns aren't allowed to be paid for their work. So they're doing all of this stuff as volunteers. You know, they got this crazy duty and their compensation is nothing. They're not allowed to cash in on it. You know, you're not allowed to be like, I'm going to use my Green Lantern ring to be a movie star. Like, they can't do it. So they have to have these, you know, side job things. We're to see, you know, Simon doesn't have enough to pay rent. So what's he end up doing to make that work? So, I think, you know, that's that great responsibility, great power, but also it turns your life into crap thing that Spider-Man does is certainly part of, you know, I think it's a part of the Green Lantern story that I haven't seen necessarily explored that much.
As long as we can avoid any clone sagas, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah. I wasn't reading that stuff, so I'm not influenced by it all. Good.
For my last question, given that this is one book in a family of titles, crossovers are bound to happen. Are you expecting to be more frequent during your run or more of just an occasional surprise for fans?
I mean, we're, you know, the other Green Lantern characters appear in my run. Hal appears, John appears, all those characters are there. As far as an actual official tie to get a crossover, Robert and I have talked about it. We haven't made firm plans yet. I think it's something we could certainly do. But I mean, with Metal and all that going and some of the other plans that they have for Green Lanterns, like, it's not in the immediate card. So, but I'm sure we'll get to it.
It's just a good point to focus on because, well, on one hand, like, if your books don't connect at all, it feels like, you know, you're just in your own little corner. But if you have too many crossovers at the same time, it feels like your stories are just drowning in other people's works.
Yeah, it's a balance you have to strike, I think. And, you know, I pulled it off at Nightwing. We had to do multiple crossover things, and I think we worked it out anyway. You know, and characters, that's the cool thing about the shared universe is characters can pass in and out and have storylines that don't necessarily need to affect the main book, but, you know, it's all there to use if you want to. So I'm sure we'll get around to it. There's a big universe of stuff. I would love to do some of those other DC characters, not just Green Lanterns. I'd love to use some of the Fourth World stuff, and I'd love to use Superman, and you know, I'm sure we'll get around to doing some cool stuff in there.
Oh, man, my favorite work of all of DC's was Jack Kirby's original Fourth World work, so I would love to see some New Gods.
I mean, yeah, they're in the book, the Hal Jordan book right now.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. I love the Kirby stuff is my favorite DC stuff, so besides Superman and Batman, so if I can use any of that stuff, I certainly will.
I mean, Edric and the Demon, OMAC, it was all just a fun time for Kirby in the 70s.
Yeah, he's just making crap up, weird crap, just fucking have a good time. So, yeah, that's how I try to approach, I try to do what Jack would do, which is get in there and make up some shit and see what sticks and really, you know, play up the epicness and push the legendary, you know, hero kind of elements and have a good old time.
I love that. Thanks, you. That's all for my questions.
Now, I have one more person that I would love to give you a question, but I really want to ask you something, Tim. You already said you're not opposed to like having any crossovers or any other characters if you're able to do it and able to do it right. But if you were able to use any of the Flashes, like Barry or Wally or older Wally, would you use them in the crossover for these books?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, the value would probably be a Kyle and Wally crossover, just because those are the characters I know the most. But I mean, Flash is cool. It's of all DC characters, the one I sort of least understand is the Flash. I don't know why. I'm just that guy. Like, everybody's one they don't quite get. Some people, it's Superman, and I don't understand that at all. But I don't know. I'm sure I could think of some cool. I think Jessica has a relationship with Barry that I think we could have a good time with in JLA. She kind of has a crush on him, or she's sort of, you know, I don't know. She kind of finds him really interesting. So we play with that a little bit. Like she wants to be cool for the Flash. So, but yeah, I mean, I would definitely do something with it. I think because they hang out in JLA every month, there's less impetus to do the JLA characters just because they're, you know, we get to see that all the time. So it's like, well, let's do the ones, I don't know, we've never seen them hang out with, like you said, Etrigan or, you know, Mr. Miracle or Firestorm, for Christ's sakes, you know, like
that'd be amazing.
Let's do some of that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, definitely will look to see some Firestorm. I haven't seen him in a very long time. Anyway, here, Eric, you have a question for Tim?
Hey, Tim, thanks again for coming on. Just super quick, since you're bouncing around, like, practically everywhere for the last however long, you know what I mean? How is it when DC pulls you into a title like this? I guess you had a lot of success with Nightwing, so I imagine they gave you a certain amount of freedom. How is it now working with DC under a new Rebirth label? Is there a lot more kind of creative freedom as there was? I mean, we don't want to talk to whatever, but I mean, I can imagine that your Nightwing run was kind of like really off the wall stuff that people really responded to. So I was wondering if you're kind of pulling a lot of that into this, and how much leeway is DC giving you on this kind of stuff?
I would say, in a weird way, I have more freedom on Green Lanterns than I did on Nightwing so far. I mean, that could change, but I don't know. They kind of just let me do whatever. I was kind of surprised when I sent in my first pitches. You know, the ones that they picked were the ones that I thought were the strangest and the most unusual, and that was the ones they went for. So, I mean, the Bofungus story, I can't believe they went for it. It's the pitch was, I want to do a Coen Brothers movie with Bofunga, and they said, okay.
They didn't just write that. How? Yeah.
I mean, they wrote back, like, well, I have a perfect title for you. It's called O Bofunga, Where Out Loud. Yep, yeah. That's it. That's, and I couldn't believe that they came up. Andrew Marino came up with that. So, yeah, they've been really supportive and let me do strange stuff and go in a different direction. I think, you know, maybe when they first launched the Rebirth books, there was an element of, we want to make sure we control this and messaging. You know, we want to make sure that we're saying the right thing. And now I think, you know, the books they were successful. I mean, Rebirth was a good venture for them. And now it's sort of, maybe it's a little more open or a little, there's a little bit more room for experimentation, I think, maybe. And so, yeah, it's free. It's pretty freeing. I'm totally... totally surprised. And, you know, well, when you read the Bofunga one, there's some stuff in there I cannot believe they let me do. So
that's fun.
So, yeah.
Bofunga symbol, raising Bofunga. Cool. And it's nice. I mean, you know, I think a lot of the guys on the cast grew up with Kyle Rayner and you know, we kind of grown into Hal Jordan the last decade or so. But it is nice that we're going to get kind of a locked-on focus on the on Jessica and Simon. And I think one of the things that's interesting about the characters and that, you know, I see you're not exactly shy about politics on social media, and that's great. I mean, you know, who can afford to be in these times? But, I mean, Simon was an interesting character when he was created because there seemed to be a deliberate intent with him to kind of rankle these kind of, like, not necessarily conservative, but kind of stereotypical ideas about, you know, who the character was and, you know, very much kind of an in-your-face creation, which is great. And I think something about Jessica that's wonderful is that she's essentially this agoraphobic. And I feel like as a female character, kind of superhero coming in and essentially being afraid of, you know, outside the world at her and judgment and stuff. And that says a lot about how maybe female creators and content creators are viewed these days by these largely male audience. So I don't want to ramble about that. But I mean, you know, as I'm interested to see if there's going to be any kind of political bite to it, or, I mean, which is, we don't need it, but I mean, you know, it'd be nice to see a little bit of that. Cause one of the things that I feel like has been missing about the Green Lanterns lately is that kind of, like, you know, almost Star Trek-esque sense of, we're talking about something more than what we're talking about, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was definitely one of my models was Star Trek. Because of the ability to tell. I mean, one of my favorite Star Trek episodes is, you know, the one about racism, where there's the right. Aliens that are half white, half black, and the other one...
Let this, you know, be my battleground. Yeah.
And it's such a perfect, simple metaphor. And it's, maybe it's really obvious now, but I think at the time, you know, they told a story that people had to think about and then, you know, could apply to the real world that they lived in. And yeah, I'm doing that. I can't stop myself from doing that. I mean, for sure. The third story arc is I'm sure it'll piss people off, but, you know, I think I approach the subject matter with a pretty even hand and you know, to show what law enforcement has to deal with in these kind of cases. So, you know, yeah, I'm going to do the I'm going to do the political thing because I always do the political thing. So, except on Deadpool Thanos because it was just stupid to punch each other. But yeah, it'll definitely be, you know, a metaphor.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned the police thing, and it is pretty interesting. And because I'm glad you clarified the idea of the Lanterns not being paid, because I think that was the kind of implicit thing in the series the last few years. But there's always been a level of confusion as to why do they spend so much time at Oa and how do they eat and that kind of thing. And I know there was a story where Hal came back home at one point and his apartment was, you know, he was evicted and didn't even know it because he hadn't been there for 5 months and stuff. And that's all kind of cool. But one of the ideas that I think is interesting about Green Lanterns is if they're volunteer policemen and they, as you say, are policemen essentially. I mean, you know, we have policemen that are kind of bound to all these codes of ethics, in at least in America. And, you know, there's a constant, you know, popularizing culture now, push pull between police and how far they go and how far they don't go, you know, and how, for me, that would be compounded by these kind of space cops that are surrounded by nothing but foreign cultures, you know, that are literally infinite of variety, you know, and like, essentially, if you can, you know, I mean, you get a SWAT guy comes into a house and shoots a dog by accident. How is that not compounded by, you know, Simon will kick open a door and he'll see what he thinks is a dog, you know, but is actually a 55-year-old tentacle lady instead of, you know what I mean? So, I'm curious to see that kind of stuff, and I think I don't even know if I have a question about that, but I'm glad to hear that that's kind of coming.
No, I mean, you know, well, the second arc, I mean, what their bad guy is a lawyer, you know, I mean, they're dealing with, you know, they're dealing with police overreach to some degree in that storyline, and you know, I don't go too far into that sort of stuff because it is a complex issue, and these are space cops. It's not the same, but you know, I mean, I think you have to be somewhat aware of the time and so yeah, I mean, definitely the devil's lawyer is the big man, the second one, so you'll see how we play around with that sort of stuff too.
Cool. And there's one big question is about now, so like DC is kind of the thing that sets them apart of Marvel, maybe, and that Image and more of these independent publishers, is that DC has considered their kind of characters more iconic and more representational. You know, Superman means something. You know, any writer can come on and he's had a million different stories, but there's a kind of essential truth to the character. Same thing with Wonder Woman and even Batman and stuff. And one of the things I think that Green Lantern has is not really an essential ideology, you know? And I think it's interesting to see when writers come on, and there's a bit of, as you say, like you can kind of do these fun space adventures or maybe some kind of Star Trek-y stuff. But I mean, what is it about to put you on the spot, but what is it about the Green Lantern that has that essential iconic, you know, ideology? What is the thing of the Green Lanterns that when you look at it, you know, what is it that when people look at Green Lanterns, like, this is the kind of thing we're going to pull away from it, and this is what it represents, maybe almost mythologically? And how does that relate to the newer characters? Because you can say things like, oh, Hal Jordan's established characterization that we've seen repeated ad nauseum, Top Gun, you know, kind of thing. And Kyle is almost like an artist, you know, but Simon and Jessica are such different characters and so hard to pigeonhole, you know. I mean, is there even a kind of binding ideology of what the IP, but, you know, the franchise means?
Yes, there is one. Green Lantern is always about discovery and fear. It's always it's always about exploration. I mean, you know, Hal is a test pilot. He's the guy who literally goes out there and risks his life for exploration. That's what it's been about, I think, since the beginning. And Kyle was a 90s reflection of that. For Jessica and Simon, it's the same thing. It's a story about fear and discovery. Sure. In the case of the two of them, it's different ways of approaching it. For Simon, fear is people fear him. And he's a guy who, you know, has to deal with the fact that in the world, the country he lives in, he belongs to a religion that scares the shit out of people. And so, you know, his discovery is about how does he play hero when he's got this past and he's got this place in the world, you know. And for Jessica, it's that she's afraid of everything. But that makes her brave because she deals with fear of everything. So, if she's they're both in their own way, right? They're both test pilots. They're both going out there, exploring and testing this ideology against the cruelness of the universe, the harshness of physics that's trying to drag them back to Earth.
Sure,
that's maybe a little bit overly poetic, but that's how I have to think about
no,
this shit.
No, that's a you really know, good so, way to.
I think that's what it is. You know, I mean, you know, if Superman is an immigrant story about, you know, about the contribution of these other people to our country and to our world, then I think, you know, that's what Green Lantern is really exemplifies, is that exploration.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah, good. I guess the last thing is, what's the kind of stuff you could do in a Green Lantern story you can't do in all the other titles you covered so far?
Oh, man, so much. I mean, one of them is just that it has this, no matter what you do, and there's this always going to be this unexplored history, right? I mean, there's been thousands and, you know, hundreds of thousands of Green Lanterns over time, and they go back all these years. And, I mean, the first storyline involves Angara, where Abin Sur is from, and I found out that it hasn't been that much done with it. There was his son, Abin Sur, and there was a few other things, but there's not a lot done with his homeworld, you know? So there's all of these nooks and crannies to explore that haven't been touched. I was super surprised that Bolfunga, there was, you know, we know some things about him, but we don't know that much about where he comes from.
Right.
So to me, it's just, there's tons, there's a billion planets and a billion characters and all this stuff that we can play. And, you know, Nightwing is somewhat more limited than that. I mean, it's the Batman mythology, and it's you know, there's a lot of stuff in there, but it's not as unlimited. And if you change it, people tend to get more upset with you. Whereas I think in a, you know, Green Lantern story, it's like, it's part of the deal, you know, to explore these. I mean, I think one of the things that Jeff did was he just took the basic story that was there and then just went into all of these nooks and crannies that want to explore. It's like, okay, well, if this means willpower, it means there must be a ring for hope. There must be one for fear. There must be one for anger. And, like, he added all these things by just digging into what was already there. And, you know, that's available, I think, to a Green Lantern writer.
Yeah, yeah. But I will do one last, just a quick general question. I mean, you do a lot of work, you know, but most of it's in comics. What is it about comics today that you think is a valid kind of experience? And do you have a kind of opinion about the idea of the digitization of comics and most people kind of reading it half the size they need to read it, et cetera, et cetera? But I mean, you know, in general, what is it about comics, you know, comic books like floppies, you know, that's your choice of expression?
I wish I knew specifically. I think the combination of words and pictures is maybe the basis human language. I think words plus picture came before spoken language. I think it came before written language. I think, you know, languages developed alongside words and pictures put together. So I think it's very human to read comics. I think if you read them at a young enough age, they become a language that is more powerful to you than anything else, maybe. And I know that's certainly that case for me. And I think there's a freedom to comics because it can be done by a limited number of people. A film obviously has hundreds of people and you know, there's a distillation, I think, of the original message that can come if you would just have one or two or three people working on it. The current format, it's not ideal. I think, you know, it's hard to do the monthly comics, the periodicals, in a time when everything is on demand all the time. People are binging everything. I think it's hard for people to wait a month. So I think we're going to go through some changes. I think, you know, the characters in superhero comics are good enough that they'll survive the transition, but I do think it'll change. You know, and I personally am not limited to interest in superheroes as far as comics go. I mean, I've done horror comics, science fiction comics, and I've done all that sort of stuff. I want there to be more of those things, and I will continue to work on those other genres. But, you know, I think when the change comes, I think the parts that have lasted 80 years will keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, you know what, and no more questions, but, you know, your stuff's a hoot. I get a lot of fun reading that stuff, and, you know, it is kind of fun to push the button sometimes. And, you know, your pitch is great here, man. Like, you're making me excited to read it, so thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Tim, thank you so much for letting us interview, especially so late, especially when you had to, like, you know, watch a movie. I'm glad you stuck by us. Hopefully we weren't too long. But thank you so much for sticking with us. If you have anything to plug, let us know, like, you know, you can plug it right now if you want.
Well, thanks, guys. It was great. And thank you for being enthusiastic. And also, if you haven't read any of my stuff, if you want to see some of my sort of superhero, spacey, crazy stuff, I just put out a book called The Action Figure Collection from Image Comics. Came out in mid-August. It's a collection of just all the fun stuff I did. A lot of it is space kind of space opera superhero stuff. So check that out, or Nightwing, and I hope you'll be on board when my first issue drops pretty soon.
Well, yeah, we're definitely can't wait to start reading it. Again, thanks so much, Tim, for being on and being a guest. You have a good night.
All right, thanks, guys.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com, follow us on Twitter @TheGLCorps, or reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814. Check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com, and the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at royclarkmethod.webs.com.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long.
That should be the next arc title.
I mean, to be completely honest, it's fucking true. I mean, have you been reading fucking Metal?
I have not.
Oh my fucking god. Why? Did you record nothing?
I spent $10 on that phone call. We used all of a dollar.
Well, good. You can get you an excuse to call more people.
And now you have 9 more interviews you can do.
Hello?
Hello, Tim?
Yeah.
Hi, Tim. This is Frankie from the Green Lantern Corecast.
The what?